Hey, yo, that's Steve.
Sorry, Petros. It's because I decided to use my AirPods versus my
Oh,
like
yeah.
what are they called, the wired ones for once. I thought it might be
Yeah.
a bit easier.
Yeah,
So the settings are all off.
because just before that, because also I'm still figuring out all the podcast thing and how to connect the best. And I also have a few pairs of headphones there as well. Yeah, just checking out. So, how you been?
Good, yeah, we just relocated, so this is my office now. It's a horrible shade of green that we have going on here, but it's nice to have a dedicated, like, it's going to become an office come like studio for like podcast studio. I'm going to get some like
Yeah.
sound panels and things to make the podcast quality better when I record those, so I'm excited for that. And it's much quieter here, it being in this house versus in a flat, like right
Yeah.
in central London. So we're still quite central in London, but far enough out so that if I pause and I just listen, I'm like, ah,
That's
peace.
weird.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's quite
Unusual.
nice.
Yeah, so the general theme of my podcast is mainly just having a chat, you know, finding out about the people I interview about, you know, your journey, how it started, because I know you had quite a journey with the accident that you had. And
Sure.
yeah, just in general, you know, talking about your experience and maybe, you know, coming up with some useful tips and recommendations maybe for someone who might follow the same path. Yeah, so if you can you just let us know how you started, what did you do before the accident, and how did the accident affected you? What steps you took to overcome it, and yeah, how you got to the place where you're at now?
Absolutely. So, yeah, before the accident, I think it's funny, most people who get into bodybuilding either come, or even as a personal trainer, they're either from like a very skinny background or they're from a very overweight background. And a lot of people have like, they've lost all the weight and that's kind of their experience. Whereas I was very much a skinny kid. I've
Yeah.
always been super skinny. Like you can almost like see my ribs through my like through my chest, even like on my upper chest. Like it took me a long time to build a thick enough chest not to see like my clear ribs coming through. So yeah, always been super skinny. And as a child, I was just massively active. So I could like I was that person who could get away with like eating tons of food and just I was always on the move, doing tons of like football basically was my thing as a child. And I was pretty good at sport. So I never went down the route of doing further education in PE and things because unfortunately I was also bullied. And a lot of bullies are that kind of jock personality and they do PE and physical education. So I wanted to get away from them. So I did like art instead. I went down that route and then I went to university and I was continuing to stay active and do all these things. And I did loads of different sports. And at that time, I also started weight training at like 16 years old. I'm now am I coming to 32 this year? So I've been doing this a long time, not very well at the start. And so I would, yeah, be doing that weight training on the side whilst doing like running club, rowing club, playing football, doing all these things. And whilst I was at university, doing one of these long 10-kilometer runs I used to do around campus, I had my Garmin watch on, my like heart rate monitor, I was fully equipped. Like you could tell I was into this sort of thing. And I was on for an all-time personal best. And I can remember seeing, because the watch gives you like a shadow of your previous time. So you could kind of see if you were running ahead of your previous time. And I knew I was like a few seconds ahead of it. So I came to some, what are they called, traffic lights, and it was flashing amber. So I was like, right, I'm legging it, I'm going. And my literally the house I was living in was maybe, I don't know, like a 5-minute walk or like it was like not far at all. I was really on the final leg. So I legged it across the road and I got hit by a van. So yeah, that wasn't great. I had initially just some scarring. So I have like some scarring still on my back and on my elbows and I fractured my skull. And they thought that was it really. They didn't think anything else went wrong.
Yeah,
So I was released.
sorry to interrupt, like, because I read a bit of
Sorry.
your story, because it wasn't something obvious, it wasn't something that you could actually see, the real injury.
Yeah,
Is that,
exactly.
yeah.
So I was released after like a day in hospital and I was feeling, I don't really know at the time, but I thought I felt all right. And then went home. It was over like the Easter period. And like we had family over. And I can remember specifically remember my mum making spaghetti bolognese and just be like, it's a food I really love. And I just couldn't eat it. And I like took myself away when everyone was eating and just went up to my room. It was just like, something's not right. And that evening I like violently was vomiting and like in a very like weird state. Like I just was like erratic. So my parents took me to A&E, and then I stayed in hospital for about a month from there because they found out I had probably bruised my pituitary gland. And the reason I was vomiting was because my electrolyte balance was way out of whack. Essentially, I was holding on to like no fluids. And so my sodium levels were really high. And I forget what the scientific term is for it, but this is just something that happens. Like people actually get it when they, like if people try and do like drinking games where they drink as much water as possible, and they essentially lead to their sodium levels being really, really low. So that's, I think I said high, but I meant low. So my sodium levels were super low. My body was just holding on to all the water like a camel. And so, yeah, I was in hospital for a long time until those levels got to an amount that allowed me to like leave without thinking he's going to like seizure and collapse and potentially pass away if we don't get to him quickly. And so there was a long stretch of months where I was probably in the most, definitely in the most depressed state I've ever been in and not happy at all. And also when I was in hospital, I wasn't eating. I was just kind of like, people get scared about losing muscle. And I'm like, well, the surest way to lose muscle is don't eat and lie in a hospital bed, basically not moving, because the body just eats itself. So any little amounts of muscle I had, and this was when I was 20 years old. So after like 4 years of training, any muscle I had as a newbie had all been eaten up. So I lost almost 25 pounds in hospital over that month. So I came out and I was like, man, I need to bulk back up. So I started doing a bit of research. So I was like, man, I really didn't know what I was doing in the gym before. I didn't want to do running anymore. I didn't want to do all the clubs and things because I just didn't have the confidence to. So I just kind of sheltered myself in a way. I also was on a fluid restriction. So I could only have 250 mils of fluid a day, which is like a tiny little bottle of fluid.
So how long did that last?
That was months. I was on months. That fluid restriction. Yeah. Which sounds crazy. At the time, it was adherable just about. Like it wasn't that bad. But I can remember I went to like, I don't know, it was like I was an intern somewhere and they had like a buffet lunch and I had lots of watermelon and I was like, man, this watermelon's great. And then the next day I was completely screwed because it was clearly loads of fluid and I just didn't account for it, which is super dumb. So yeah, like I wasn't having milk on cereal. Obviously I wasn't having tea, coffees. I was just having this one little like bottle of water a day, which yeah, wasn't much fun. And then I was given medication to go on for several, for a long period of time, diuretics to help me kind of pee a lot of fluid out. But yeah, it wasn't working out how they wanted to. And it seemed like I just needed time. So during this period of time, I was also getting back into my weightlifting because it felt like I could control that variable. Like in the gym, I'm safe. I can just do it on my own. And the nutrition as well. The advice I took from the start was very much like old school advice. There's great like education out there now. Whereas when I was getting back into it, there was bits and pieces, but a lot of it was still like very like bro science-y, where it's like, you need to like, as long as you eat clean, you can eat as much food as you want and you won't gain fat, you'll just gain muscle. And that was kind of the diet I was on. So I rebounded body weight heavier than I went into hospital. After about a year, I gained like 40 pounds. Some of it muscle. I definitely gained all the muscle back that I had lost, but lots of fat. And I was really not very happy with how I was looking. So then I was like, oh, I think I went on a keto diet for a period of time. I lost like 20 pounds and then I got into pretty good shape. And during that period of time, I also started educating myself further. And I came across Lyle McDonald, his website, bodyrecomposition.com. That led me to like Alan Aragon. I found Matt Ogus. That led me to 3DMJ and Eric Helms. So I started getting a really ground year of education and learning about natural bodybuilding. And this was where the crux of where kind of my love for natural bodybuilding came, because I was like, man, now I understand the process. I know if you do these inputs, you get this output. I know calorie balance, flexible dieting. I can see this as a lifestyle that I can enjoy. And I kind of want to help other people do this. So at the time I graduated from university and I went and was working an office job and I did a PT qualification on the weekends. So I became a one-on-one PT in 2013, even a lot earlier. So I only did one-on-one PT for just under a year, because whilst I was doing that, I was also started a contest prep. My first natural bodybuilding show was 2014. And people in the gym were seeing me kind of get really lean. I had the nickname compound guy because no one was doing like big compound lifts. They're like, man, all you do is deadlift and squat and bench. Like, what's going on? So they were like, I need to learn from you. And these were kind of kids who are maybe 2-3 years younger than me from the surrounding schools. And I was like, they don't want a one-on-one PT, but they wanted some programming. So I was like, I can do some online coaching for you. Like, I had this online coach for my show. I was like, I can do the similar thing for you guys if you would like. So I started charging them £30 a month, like stupidly cheap, and built up like a client roster and getting results with them. So that was awesome. And it was great because I don't know if are you a one-on-one P, Petrus?
Yeah. Cause I actually still have my full-time job.
Okay.
Which is dental technician, which is not really related. Yeah. And I still do one-to-one sessions here in like a small studio gym.
Cool.
Yeah. So kind of, it just, eventually I think I want to go into online coaching, but this just to build more like the client, you know, and coach relationship, you know. Sure. It helps to read your people. It helps a bit to understand, you know, what they actually want. And
yeah,
just to read people, I guess, in general.
Yeah, so you know how exhausting one-on-one PT can be as well. And especially when you start, if you're not very confident, like it can be really hard to talk to people on the gym floor and kind of feel like you can teach them properly. And I came into the role not super confident. And I also was very tired because I was in prep. And I didn't, at the time, there wasn't such an awareness of non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So I didn't track my steps. I just sat and I was like, man, I can sit in a desk and do online coaching. This is great. Like, I don't have to be on my feet on the gym floor and getting tired. I'm also quite a introverted person by nature. So a lot of very successful personal trainers are quite extroverted. They really get energy from other people. They're very confident and like quite loud often. Not all of them, but some are. And that just wasn't me. So I started to transition to online coaching as I was competing. So by the time it was like, I think it was 2015, I'd already moved out of the gym and was doing online coaching full time. I was living at home at the time as well. And I moved out into London and I was just barely scraping enough to like pay rent at this time. So I just started putting out tons of content. I was doing lots of blog posts at the start. I didn't have the podcast. I was doing kind of Instagram blog posts, lots of Facebook posts, things like this. And I was just getting results with clients and the kind of awareness at the time. I was getting more and more people from my local area referring people. But over time, I started to reach a wider audience and I was picking up clients from like all over the world. And it just slowly continued to build. And this is where kind of the brand Revive Stronger came from because of my accident and how I was like, man, I managed to kind of recover from my accident, get into the best shape of my life, compete as a natural bodybuilder. Like if I can do this, I can help other people who aren't even in half as bad a situation do something similar. Yeah. And that's really what I wanted to pass on to people. Cause I think especially guys who are younger and in their like teens, they don't really have a good awareness of what's achievable naturally. And I think a lot of the time they look at someone like me, even who's been doing this over a decade now, and they'll be like, that guy's clearly on juice. Like he's way more muscular than me. Like there's no reason for that apart from he's on juice. It's like, a decade of training will do a lot like for you, especially when you're consistent.
Cause I remember when I started following you, like it was probably 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember first time seeing you, I thought he's like, you're good, but you're not like a pro level. Like, you know, just like, I thought like you're good. And then I probably wasn't following you like that close at checking every single post, but like every few weeks your posts are coming up. It's like, okay. There's changes coming in. And you know, like then there's a gap between these pictures that they see, is like, you can actually notice all the difference. And like when I seen your last year competitions, I was like, fucking hell, he's like, you know, he's near the pro level there already, because what you took second in the vaults already. Like, fucking hell, when I first seen you, I thought I did not expect you, because like you was in a good shape already, but I did not expect that, you know, you can still from there make so much change. And you know, because I think you helped me realize that I don't really work that hard.
Right. You know,
cause,
okay.
Because I'm from the same kind of background. I was always skinny. Like, I struggled to put on weight because, you know, it might sound funny, I can't even put fat just because my appetite is so low. You know, I might be starving. I have a sandwich. I have half a sandwich. I look away. I stop eating, and that's it. I don't want it anymore. You know, I can get on with my day. Yeah. So it was really, you know, inspiring. You know, seeing you how you from already advanced level, you start, you know, every year. You know what? Because just for the difference, like from your first competition to your recent competition, how much you actually put on muscle wise on the stage?
So my stage weight when I first competed was 160 pounds. And I hovered this season anywhere from, at Worlds, I was 168 pounds, but much, much leaner. So I have certainly put on at least 10 pounds of stage weight since my first competition, probably closer to 15 pounds since then.
Yeah, it's just for the context, you know, because how many years was from the 7 years, seven, 6 years between the competitions?
Yeah, so yeah, six, 7 years.
Yeah,
yeah, 7 years.
Because it's just, you know, for some people, you know, who might listen, they think like, what, 6 years, you know, to just gain 10, 15, when you, within the first year, you know, with the first year gains, they do like, you know, 10, 30, you know, pounds. Like, you can, you know, between there, you know, you can gain in first year and, well, first few years, and then 6 years to gain another 10, you know, it just shows, you know, how actually hard is to build the muscle. I think I probably went off the way. Just carry on with.
Sure. No, that's no. You're right. It's, and that's partly why I really, in some ways, it frustrates me, because I'd love to be genetically elite. I'd love to be, and I don't really like thinking that I've not got amazing genetics, because I think that holds you back a little bit. I think thinking you're amazing, you have amazing genetics, that can help you in some ways, because then
because there is studies showing that body follows mind as well, isn't there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I clearly have fairly average genetics. And I think I like at least that I can show that even if you have fairly average genetics, if you really want something, like, you can put in that time and effort and you can make it work for you. Like, you have like hard work, like, it's kind of like the elite genetics, if they don't, what's the saying is something along the lines of like, if the person with elite genetics doesn't work hard, someone who works hard will outwork this person with elite genetics. And a lot of the people who are just, everything comes to them quite easy, they never work that hard. Like, they never really push themselves. And I think they lose a lot of the kind of love for the process. Whereas, like, I love the process. I love working hard and climbing the ranks and having seen that long progression. And I like sharing that with people, because I think the majority of us are like me, not this person over here. So I can actually help a ton of people achieve similar results to myself, I feel like. And I have to do a lot of clever and hard, like, smart, hard work, consistent work to be able to get here. Whereas, again, this person over here, who everything kind of just comes to them, they grow muscle very easily, they have very good symmetry and proportions, and they do very well at shows. How much have they changed in 10 years? Probably not a great deal. They probably had a lot just come, and then they haven't had to push the limits. And some people will, and the people who have elite genetics who work hard and smart, they're the top of the top, especially the ones who are like enhanced and have the best the best sources of drugs.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's partly where I wanted to go with Revive Stronger, was just like, a lot of the guys I worked with were frustrated with the lack of results, and they thought they needed to go to drugs and like performance enhancing drugs to get results. And it's like, no, you just need more time, consistency, effort, and enjoy the process, because that's the most important thing. Because you think, like, once you've got abs or once you've got like cat delts or whatever, you're going to be happy. It's like, no, you want something else. You'll want like a rounder chest. You'll want bigger biceps. You're like, so you have to enjoy the process. And by enjoying the process, that's what leads to the outcome anyway. So that's kind of the message I really try and share, is like, work hard consistently and you'll be able to achieve that kind of end result. And you might achieve more than you ever could hope for.
Yeah. What's in your mind next? What's next for Revive Stronger?
So yeah, I guess I didn't really tell people where I went, but obviously I went online coaching full-time in 2015. So it's been a long time since then. Ran a few seminars with Mike Israetel and Renaissance Periodization with the podcast now. I have a team of coaches. I have a business partner in Pascal Flohr, who's over in Berlin. And yeah, it's been an incredible journey and we want to keep growing. So I think actually this is the first time ever we've invested in some business coaching, which hasn't started yet, but we're going to get a business mentor to help grow the business a bit more. I think myself and Pascal are very much in the business. And so it's hard to look at the outside of the business and see what needs to be done. So having someone to check, just like a coach, just like you have a person, like someone helping you with your coaching or training, it's like, you just want to be an athlete. We just want to be in the business doing the work. Someone from the outside can kind of tell us a little bit of what to do. So that'll be exciting. Exactly. And then, sorry, I was just going to say, we will be running hopefully a seminar this year, because the last couple of years, COVID has definitely stopped us in our tracks to be able to do that. We should have a full range of motion training seminar and like seminars with Jared, Mike and Charlie. So that'll be really cool because, yeah, it's been a long time since we've been able to do that. I'm very excited to do that. But there's nothing, we'll have to see what else comes. But I just want to help more people like take it to stage, but also just people who are like, maybe they are that person who feels like, man, I just need a little bit of help. Like the intermediates who want to get advanced, or the advanced people who can't keep improving. I just want to help that individual continue to get there through my experience and kind of knowledge.
Yeah. Is that your main clientele that you get? That someone who's already been training and they just want to dial everything up instead of someone complete beginner?
Yeah, we don't work with, I would say, never work with any beginners, actually. I used to, but now we never work with beginners. And in fact, for our online coaching, at least, it's a bit too advanced to really help them. There's better coaches for that individual. So yeah, mostly I work with coaches. So someone like yourself, maybe, who's been training like a good amount of time, they have a lot of knowledge, but maybe they kind of, they need the pieces of the puzzle put together a little bit, and I can come in and they can be like, oh, now I see. And they kind of, they learn a lot during the process, and they're obviously incredibly invested because this is their kind of career. I work with mostly other coaches and then a handful of competitors and maybe a handful of like some more gen pop people who are quite interested, not newbies, but they're not a coach themselves. But I would say almost 60-70% of the people I work with are like personal trainers who maybe want to compete in future, maybe not, they're not sure.
On an edge, like trying to squeeze out the gains that they still can and then go from there. In terms of, I think you touched a little bit on learning where you got your education from. What are the resources you go for just to educate yourself?
So at this beginning, and I think this generally makes sense for a lot of people, it's kind of like learning to drive a car. Like you really cram, you get like an expert to help you, and you then learn enough to pass a test. And then all the real learning comes the experience of driving the roads, because it's very different. And so you learn a lot that way. You learn by doing, essentially. So when I first, well, I mean, before I even got into the industry and before I started doing my personal training qualification, I'd already read every article on Lyle McDonald's website like multiple times, and I would like have textbooks, so like Mark Ripito's textbooks he would have. I'd get some of like the NCSA, I think that is the short term of it, like some of their textbooks, like the books I have here. Like I would just like plow through them and really try and gather as much information as possible. Then later on, Renaissance Periodization, their kind of diet books like the RP diet. And then obviously their like scientific principles of strength training was like a great book for me. Now they've got their hypertrophy book, which I haven't actually read cover to cover, whereas the other one I had. But this is what I'm kind of getting to, is once you've learned a lot of like the, I guess, the foundational concepts, it's putting it into practice is now where you learn. So now I learn a lot through doing. So my own training, my own nutrition, but also hundreds of clients helping them and seeing where their kind of struggles and successes are coming from. And previously lots of seminars. There used to be a lot more seminars that would happen, especially in the UK, like experts would come in every year, maybe a couple. So I'd go to every single one of those. And then through my podcast and interviewing experts, and previously I would also do consultations with people. So like Broderick Chavez, I pay him a fee to have a consultation with him, or I've done that with Jared. I've done that with Mike in the past as well, where we do like private one-on-one consultations. But now they're kind of friends. And also like I get them on the podcast and I can almost do that. And I can be quite selfish in that way, but obviously dispense the information as well. And I like to just keep up with them. And then also I think keeping up with the Mass research review. So monthly applications of strength sport, I think it's called, with Eric Helms, like Mike Zordos, Greg Nichols, and all of those good guys, Eric Trexler. Really good to keep up with that to kind of keep on the cutting edge. And then you have like examine.com for supplementation. Easy, it's all there. You don't need to kind of know it all off the top of your head. And then obviously you can go into PubMed, you can dig into that if you want to. And keeping I keep my finger on the pulse of like what's going on within the industry through social media. So that's where like Coach Kasim and N1 through their biomechanics kind of stuff, I keep a kind of a look at what they're doing, what they're introducing, try out myself. Maybe I may invest into a course or like a member site to dig into some of the information. But the majority of my learning comes from online one-on-one coaching with people and seeing what's happening, like that experience, because a lot of the principles of training nutrition, they're not really going to change. So that doesn't really mean you have to keep your finger on your pulse massively there.
Yeah, because I think at your level, at your clients, it's only these small nuanced details that you can tweak, because basics always going to be basics. And just like from person to person, that I guess more genetical difference, biological differences, that's what you need to focus on and understand that person as an individual. And like I said, do these nuanced tweaks for them.
Absolutely.
It just, when you mentioned Coach Kasim as well, because what they do, I think, is really applicable for someone like you, for someone really advanced. But like, do you think you need to be so specific in terms of muscle building when it comes to beginners and like maybe just like new intermediates? Do you really need to do these very, maybe not so complicated, but I guess more complicated than just the basic exercises?
Yeah, I very much look at that sort of stuff like almost supplementation. It's actually really funny because supplementation is something people often have questions about, and it's really sexy and it sells a lot. Same with like this very specific biomechanics, like pull this cable like this because the muscle inserts here and attaches here and you can shorten it and you can promote a certain resistance profile and the muscle's stronger in the shortened position versus the lengthened position, what have you. It's like, that sounds like really complicated and nuanced and like sexy. It's like, well, get stronger on some big basic compound lifts that feel really good to you. That's probably better advice, but it's boring. It's not sexy. And to be honest, I don't know if everyone even needs to go, like if you never supplemented, for example, with creatine, how much difference is that going to make to your overall gains? Very minimal. The same with this kind of level of biomechanics knowledge. I'll say if you never really knew it to super in depth, it's not going to make a huge difference. Like a bicep curl at the end of the day is a bicep curl. And I think a lot of the things that we do in the gym, so long as you have some awareness of your body and like my muscle connection and kind of what is full range of motion, what's safe, what are the basic principles of lifting? I think if you then use some variation within your exercises, some machines, some free weights, you end up doing a lot of what like the advanced principles and the like sexy things are. An example of this is like eccentric overload training. There was recently a paper released, and this is something that Brad Schoenfeld uses in his Max Muscle Plan 2.0. And I was just reading about it. Essentially, this is where you're stronger on the eccentric versus the concentric. So maybe on like a leg extension, you can use two legs on the way up and then control it heavier on the way down. And you get some like eccentric overload, where maybe it promotes more muscle damage, mechanical tension, and more growth. But you can, on some movements, I was just discussing it with Mena Henselmans, you do this intuitively. So on like a lat pull down, use quite a powerful kind of concentric down, and then you control it on the way up. And you're kind of getting that eccentric overloading through that. Or you like a dumbbell lateral raise, you might go a little bit more powerfully on the way up and then control it a little bit more slowly on the way down. And I think the same is for like a lot of the biomechanics is where like if you do it a certain way, you're like, yeah, I feel it in that muscle. And it's like you kind of know where it is, but you don't have to know like every single muscle group, every little attachment. Oh, this is the iliac, the thoracic, and all that kind of stuff is good. And it's never a bad thing to do, just like supplementation. Like, it's never bad to supplement with like creatine, but you never need to necessarily go there. And if you look at creatine like, oh man, that's the holy grail, and you forget about calories, you forget about protein, like you miss the forest for the trees. And the same can be said, like, if you start doing these, like, I don't know, cable machines, and you end up kind of really like not focusing on progressive overload, for example, training hard, for example, having quality repetitions, like you can start kind of, yeah, you need to learn to walk before you run. And I think those are some more running principles, but they really do help for more advanced individuals. And I would say they help for people who have very like stubborn muscle groups that they really struggle to target. So it can be quite helpful for bodybuilding in particular, especially as an advanced bodybuilder where maybe you're lacking a certain muscle group. It's like, man, where does this, like, what movement can really specifically target this little area of my back or my chest or what have you? Like, but I think a lot of the times, yeah, we kind of do the right thing without needing to go to that level. I don't know if Coach Kasim would agree. I think he'd probably agree with parts. But obviously biomechanics is very big for him. And I think for good reason, like, it's huge. It's a very important. I just don't think most people need to take it to the level that sometimes they might take it to. And hopefully they don't forget the groundwork beforehand. And that's something I was going to say to you is a lot of the people I work with, they want the nuance. They think they need the nuance, but in fact, they don't. They need to sort out the basics because they do not have the basics under control. And the amount of personal trainers who I'll look over their like food diary and I'll be like, hey, what? Like, what are you eating? Like, why have you got like 80% of your protein coming from one meal in the day and then the rest barely anything? Like, why are you just snacking on like crisps and Haribos through the day? Like, I'm like, have you looked at what you're eating? And sometimes they just get into this habit and they don't realize, or other people just, they simply aren't training hard. I'll look at a form video and I'll be like, you didn't even like not break a sweat, but the reps never slowed down. You never showed any exertion in your face. Every repetition was perfect, but just poor. Or the other way, where they're not using a full range of motion, they're swinging, they're working past failure when they think they're at 4 RIR, and I'm like, oh, okay. So yeah, I think I say this quite often, as at Revive Stronger, we never like bullshit. I'm never gonna like promote sexy things for the sake of it, and I think a lot of people want that. And I think sometimes, ultimately, I hope that people realize what we're selling is like what works, and then we'll go into that more specific nuanced stuff, but only when it's appropriate, when you've got and nailed the basics, because the basics are basics for a reason.
Yeah, I guess I view it more as like another tool in your toolbox, you know. Once, you know, because if you've been doing, you know, a straight barbell curl for 10 years, you maybe want to know to change, you maybe want to do it something different, you know, just for the sake of, you know, like I say, you know, something else, no, because you just get bored with the same plan all the time. And I think that's the main reason, no, when you can to choose, you know, these, like you say, those sex exercises and do them instead.
I think there's definitely something to be said for getting to this kind of stuff when you're more advanced, just because you have to get quite comfortable with it being very samey as a bodybuilder. Like we mentioned, muscle growth is very slow. Like gaining a pound of muscle a year when you're in a like decade deep bodybuilder, that's good progress. And that's very like really slow. And you have to just get very comfortable doing the same things day in, day out. And so sometimes when you can look at exercises, like new exercises, you can think about resistance profiles and you can use maybe different kit, like the prime equipment where you can like emphasize it loaded in the stretch, shortened or mid position. It's, I think in some ways, I'm not sure if it's really doing much, but it certainly makes it a little bit more exciting versus just the same machines or the same process. Like it just keeps the appetite there. And I think it's the same for like supplements. When a new supplement comes out, it's like, ooh, like, oh, I'll try this pre-workout that's come out. Maybe that will do something. It's like pre-workouts as a whole, they're really fucking probably not doing much. It's mostly caffeine. But sometimes like I buy them myself because I'm just like, oh, I just want to do something different. I want to try something else and see if it does anything.
You want that little kick, you know, when it gives you. And like even Like I have clients also who ask me always about supplements. They always say, oh, my friend is taking these BCAAs, my friend is taking these aminos, my friend is taking these, you know, pre-workouts, and it gives them these magical results or, you know, whatever. It's like it's sometimes it's getting hard to deflect them from taking them. And I'm just like, if you, they're not going to do any harm. If you want, you can take them and you can try, you know, because like most of my clients who come to me, they do have money, you know, they're not going to take it out of their savings to buy a pre-workout. So no, if you want this nice tasting coffee, which is a pre-workout, basically, yeah, you know, just go and get it and try and see if it gives you any results. And no, sometimes it actually, it maybe helps them mentally, because when they come to the gym, you know, they're fired up, they want to know to get to the training, want to do this exercise, they're excited about it, instead of, you know, coming after a long day at work, you know, like been sitting all day on their ass and they don't really want to get moving. So I guess it's more mental benefit, I guess, with these supplements.
Yeah, I think it's like we said before, you can't really detach the mental from the physical in many ways. So whilst you could on paper do the same exercise like forever and just progress that and never have to change it or something because it works, like you mentally you want to change something because you just get fatigued, you just mentally get a bit like bored of certain things. It's like eating food. Like you could probably eat like a range of foods that provide the micronutrients you need, the macronutrients you need, and eat the same thing every single day forever, but that's probably gonna not be adherable long term because you just get bored, like mentally bored of it. You want to vary that, and you can. And the same can be said for exercises. I think you probably know that as well as a personal trainer. Like sometimes you just change something for the sake of their mental adhere, like their for them to mentally enjoy it more, so they're adhere versus that actually being a need to change it. So long as you keep the core principles in place and that's kind of guiding everything, I think you can play with a lot of these different things, and that there are many roads to Rome in that sense that actually get you there when you're directing them all through this central kind of foundational concept. It's when you try and pull, like, I don't know, you do BCAAs, but again, you don't look at total protein or protein spread through the day. But if you've done those two and then you're like, I just want to try some BCAAs, cool. Same with pre-workout. If you have your pre-workout and your sleep is already in a good place, great. But if you're using like BCAAs and hoping they're going to do something when you haven't got any of those things in place, or a pre-workout when you are sleeping like trash, yeah, it's really not going to be doing much. It's barely even putting a plaster over like a wound. It's just like you're kind of going to spin your wheels, which I think a lot of people get to, and then they're like, oh, I need super supplements then. It's like, oh no. Yeah. You really just need to work on the basics.
Yeah, like when it comes to the clients and changing their mindset, because I guess you'd also get a lot of them who are pushing to failure or working after the failure, and, you know, just trying to squeeze every gain as possible. You know, like you see all these, you know, pro bodybuilders, you see, you know, all these nice, you know, training videos when they just go and pass the failure and just drop sets, supersets and stuff like that. I find with men, it's hard to push them back away from it. But what kind of steps do you take to help and kind of, like I say, navigate them away from that failure training?
I think I'm fortunate that most people who come to us already have an awareness of reps and reserve. They already know that's something that we use within our programming because they see me using it. So they're like, clearly I'm going to be using it. I think they'd be shocked to, like, I'm like, go straight to failure, go past failure week one. They'd be like, where? So for me though, it's education. So I think the reason we get people like that is because they've already seen me applying it and they understand why, because I've done infographics explaining, like, you get a superior stimulus to fatigue ratio. You don't have to train to failure. There's no actually evidence to support needing to train to failure versus 1 to 2 reps in reserve. Taking it to failure now and then is something we can definitely do, and it can probably be promoting results in the long term, and you learn. And I think that's, for me, been the prime way. And it's kind of a case of saying to them, like, how often are you getting injured? How are your results? like how do you progress week on week when you're training to failure every week? We don't adapt at that speed. Like we're lucky if we see like a PR every month, that's really good progress. Maybe it's every 2 months. So it's like, well, if you're accumulating, if you're trying to train to failure every time, like you just hit a brick wall and you have to take like however many steps back. For me, it was injuries. So I just keep pushing balls to the wall every time and like try and get a rep every single time. I'd either get injured or I'd just start seeing my like my fatigue would skyrocket. So my performance would plummet and I'd just start scaling back. I'm like, why am I getting weaker every week? Because I just had no awareness of like deloads, fatigue management. So I think that's the prime way for me is education and being like, this is why we might use such a tool. This is what the science says. And here, like I can even give you some anecdotal evidence of some people who have been using it who are freaking jacked and seeing amazing results. And why don't we try it and see how you get on? And sometimes people are like, I can't start at like 3 or 4 reps in reserve. Like that's just, it's too easy for me. I'm like, okay. Let's start at 2, at least start at 2 RIR, maybe we repeat 2 RIR, and then maybe we go to 1 and then maybe not. At least we get then 4 weeks of accumulation. And then maybe they're like, okay, let's try 3. And then maybe we get to 4 eventually. It's slowly like dose it out to them. But I think, especially as it's like anything new, especially because bodybuilding is quite a emotional thing. Training is very like close to a lot of people's hearts. Slowly people are starting to adopt some of the principles that are coming through science that are going to help promote better results. I think it's just like a matter of education and slowly over time, it's like flexible dieting and that approach. Initially, a lot of the old dogma was holding strong. It was like, no, clean and dirty foods. And after a while now, it's kind of people have accepted, oh, okay, I can eat a bagel instead of like my cream of rice. It's like, okay, I can have like broccoli instead of asparagus or something. It's like, yeah, and that can promote better overall results. And now I don't have this weekly binge because I hate my diet. Like I can adhere all week and see better results. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you ever see a cases when training to failure could be beneficial in training?
At all, training to failure, yes. I think, I guess for me, I very, very rarely truly fail a rep, like concentric failure where I go up and I'm like, oh, can't do it. Very rare for me. Typically, I get to the rep where it's like, just about finish it. I'm like, there's no way in hell I've got another repetition, so I'll just leave it there. And that's not RAR, so no reps in reserve.
Yeah.
So going to... trying to do another rep, I guess, would be failure. It's like that little bit of nuance that really doesn't matter because we already know science says pretty evidently that if you're 1 to 2 reps reserve, you get as good results if you're naught or at failure or what have you, and it could just drive excess fatigue. But on some isolation movements, I think like a bicep curl, if you just want to go until you can't do a rep, a good rep, like and you come up and you're like, and drop it, cool. Or if you're doing like a dumbbell fly or dumbbell press and you go to do a rep, and you're like, oh, that one was really grindy. I don't know if I've got this next one. Go for it. See what you've got and then drop it. But you have to be careful where you place this style of training because like I said, it's very fatiguing. So I like it in a context where it's on movements that it's safe to do. So like a dumbbell press would be one example of a compound lift that it's safe on, but a squat or a like barbell RDL, they're not safe movements to truly like try and like come down and then not get up. That's quite risky. You probably could do it in a safe way, but I'd prefer you to do that one really grindy rep in where you're like, fuck, I've left everything there. Like I'm 90% sure I ain't getting a rep. Call it. Like there's no point trying to go down and then not getting up. Like you could just injure yourself and at best, like, I don't know, you just feel like a dick because you just feel like you have to take all the plates off one side and the other side and re-rack it and everyone's looking at you like, man, this guy just failed.
It reminds myself because I used to squat until I can't stand and I just let the bar
horrible.
It was the point when I used to squat like almost every single day because I wanted to. Always was afraid of having chicken legs. And also, right. I thought I always need to go the squats. Yeah. And more is better. Yeah, and I always remember myself, you know, squatting down. I'm like, oh, I can't anymore. Hang it on the pins and with the head down, take you off the plates.
Oh, no. Oh. So yeah, you want to do it on movements that's safe on. So isolation-based movements, like dumbbell movements where you can just kind of drop it to the side and it's fine. Don't do it on movements that it's really risky on. So you could do it in a hack squat fairly safely, but on a barbell back squat, that's pretty risky. And doing it in a position during your mesocycle where it's like that really high levels of fatigue that you're driving isn't going to impact the future. So either you don't do a lot of it. So maybe you do your last set to failure after you leave some reps in reserve on the earlier set so that you're not accumulating just excessive amounts of fatigue. Or like I like to do it is I take my final week of the mesocycle before I'm about to deload. So I do an easy week of training. So driving up tons of fatigue is okay because I know I'm going to wipe the slate clean the next week. So I tend to do it in the week before deloading. I take everything to naught RAR. Some things I might fail on, but typically I don't get to that point of truly failing because I kind of know. And once you've done it long enough, and the science also shows this, people who are inexperienced with RAR suck at it. But you learn, and failing is one way you can really learn well because you know your limits. But people who are very experienced with training, they're very good at doing RPE and relative intensity and RAR. So once you've done a few mesocycles of it, you're really well in the groove of it, and now you can really benefit from it.
Yeah, I think I lost. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Oh yeah, just maybe I sound my headphones. Oh. Yeah. So. I think it also can be used with someone who used to train to failure all the time. And I think then you can maybe keep them away on the compound movements, but like you said, such as, you know, bicep curls and maybe lateral raises, you know, let them take you, you know, to failure on the last set or so, just to kind of give them something what they really like and they really enjoy.
Scratch that itch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I also think like, because I have clients who train maybe twice a week and an hour each session. So they have plenty of time to recover. So these clients are probably work closer to failure and some small moves, like I'm not going to take them to failure on squats, like you said as well, but like, you know, maybe shoulder presses and, you know, maybe bigger movements that I myself wouldn't take to failure, but because they know they have so much time to recover, I maybe push them closer all the way to failure just because of, like I say, they have plenty of time to recover.
Yeah, I completely agree. The there is probably like quite a linear increase in terms of stimulus from 3 to 4 to like 1 to 0 RAR. So the closer you train to failure, you do get a bit more stimulus, potentially exponential rises in fatigue. But if you're only training and if it's so little, then that fatigue doesn't matter so much. So you can train closer and you can get more stimulus for fatigue. But if you're someone like yourself or me or a lot of my clients who are training 4, 5, 6 times a week, you have to be so careful about that fatigue, because that's often what holds more advanced trainees back. So that's why that managing it a little bit more carefully. But your example is a very good example of where actually you might be holding them back by training as that so far from it, because it's like, well, they're quite new and they're only training twice a week, so they've recovered after like a day.
yeah exactly. Yeah, so one of the final questions I have is correlation or causation. Dragon Ball is the movie, the anime that I see that every single, well, not every single, but a lot of fitness professionals, like, you know, lectures, like, you know, like Dr. Mike Israetel, you know, like I can name quite a few of them who watched Dragon Ball and they've been big fans for a while, and they're all in this fitness industry as an educators or, you know, just fitness enthusiasts. And like, that is that correlation or is that causation of Dragon Ball?
It's a good one, actually, because I think I know, for example, someone who I probably would say is in love with Dragon Ball more than anyone else is Jackson Pios. He even has like he's the researcher who's done a lot on diet breaks. Do you know Jackson?
No. Did you have him on your podcast?
Yeah. So you'll probably recognize him. He looks a bit like Eminem at the moment, but super jacked. So he's from Australia, but he's living in Bali at the moment. And he has a Dragon Ball, like he's sold t-shirts with like Dragon Ball people on characters on. And I have those. And I know for him, his like goal physique was Goku. like from the Dragon Ball Z era. So I'm pretty sure for him, like it very much was like a causation thing where he was like, I want to look like Goku, so I'm going to the gym. I know for me, I actually got into like Dragon Ball and everything like outside of the gym. It wasn't like related to it. I didn't like train because I wanted to look like Goku or anything. I don't know about those other guys though. But yeah, it's those physiques. I look at someone like, do you know the anime Baki?
No.
If you search like Baki, Hanma or whatever, if any of the listeners know who he is, like he's a crazy physique. He's like a kickboxer, like MMA guy. And yeah, these cartoon physiques are just insane. Me and Pascal were just talking about it on the improvement season, actually, where it was like, we used to look up to, what was the film? I can't remember what it was. It was like Brad Pitt in one of the old films where he was like, that you look at him now and he looks skinny to me now. Whereas before, you'd look at him and be like, man, this guy's like super jacked. Like our standards are just going up and up and up. Yeah. And some of these, yeah, cartoons unfortunately put like unrealistic expectations on us.
Yeah,
I want like Frieza's delts.
Yeah, because in a way, you know, it's all about hard work. You know, if you get, let's say, injured or whatever, you come back stronger and stuff like that. It's all in it. And I'm thinking like, did it really cause all of us to get into fitness? Did it really cause us to work hard and things like that? And I thought, should I start watching it with my daughter so she gets into training? Yeah.
You should definitely watch it with your daughter.
yeah, of course. Yeah, so I think it covers pretty much all I wanted, you know, to hear from you. And I really appreciate of your time and coming up on it. And if people want to find you, where should they go?
Sure, yeah. Thank you very much for letting me talk, and thank you also because I delayed you on this, so I appreciate you still would have me on. So if people want to reach out to me or kind of see what I'm getting up to, the best places are Instagram. So Revive Stronger on Instagram is where I'm at, and then obviously also our YouTube channel. So that has the podcast, it has some vlogs out on there as well, where I go a bit more into depth in certain subjects on my training and stuff, get a bit more of an insight into what I'm doing. Our website is revivestronger.com, so they can see kind of our online coaching there is available. All of our like podcasts and everything's available over there as well. And then, yeah, the Revive Stronger podcast on any podcast provider as well. So you can head over there. I get the pleasure to interview a lot of experts in the field, which is really cool. So, yeah, people can go over there and learn.
Yeah, cool. I'll attach all of that to the comments below. And thanks for coming again. And I hope I might get you on again, try to get some more nuanced questions and get some more wisdom out from you.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.